Welcome to the Futile Podcast. If you want to send us an email, you can send us an email at futilepodcast@gmail.com. This evening we're going to talk about the X-Files and sort of the evolution of the X-Files into this new film that just kind of jumped out at everybody 5 years really after the ending of the show, and therefore something like almost 10 years after the last feature film, which took place between seasons 5 and 6, I think. And it ended up having 9 seasons, I think. The last 3 or so were mostly with the T-1000, and they kind of had a whole replacement Mulder and Scully going on that, which I thought was kind of stupid. A little backstory. The X-Files was started in 91, I think. And it was Chris Carter's whole idea. He's just some surfer guy that wanted to tell a story about sort of like government conspiracy, UFO stuff, and what if there were these FBI agents that investigated these things, that investigated unexplainable phenomenon, you know, stuff that's on the tabloids, what is it, the Weekly World News, is that what it's called?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Which is defunct now.
Oh, that's too bad. And it was on at 9 o'clock, I think, on Fridays on Fox, the first season of it. And
then it went to Sundays.
Then it went to Sundays by the third season or the fourth season, which I think was a much better move for it.
Started in 93.
It was more solid. 93, okay, that's better.
Ended in 2002.
Yeah. So 9 seasons, yeah. When it first started, there weren't a lot of other shows out there like it that had sort of its style. Not that it had a lot of style necessarily, but it was very dark, and some of the stories were the episodic stories. Were really pretty well-written standalone stories that had, like, interesting characters in them, and there was, you know, they were like horror anthology stories, almost, you know? It's like, you know, if a guy's a psychic, you know, like, I'm thinking of Clive Bruckman's Final Repose, which won Peter, I'm losing his name. He was in Yellowbeard. He was in...
O'Toole?
No, Peter Boyle.
Yeah.
Peter Boyle Emmy Award, because he played this psychic that was just sort of a deadpan, and that one was a really good episode. And there was a handful of good episodes like that. I would say the first 4 seasons were pretty solid with the writing, and then at the same time they were running this sort of building conspiracy mythology that, you know, you would get more information about here and there during the sweeps week at seasons and the season finales and the season premieres. And that would keep you kind of going. So you'd have, so I don't know if it was one of the first shows that would really tried to do that, where you had to pay attention like that. Other than like soap operas, which are day by day, and that kind of, you know, soap, and so there's a soap opera element to it. But you know, you kind of had to watch the show, and you had to sort of see the evolution of this. And it was really, for the most part, the first few seasons of it, other than a few rare bits here and there, they weren't about the characters. They were about the stories.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about Mulder and Scully and, like, let's build romantic tension between them. Like, that really is very minimal in the first few seasons of it. And there's very little about them even in the first few seasons. It's more about what happens in the story. And, I mean, obviously as that goes on, they eventually start shifting it to the characters. I think that a lot of that is, to borrow an anime phrase and use it kind of inappropriately here, is really fan service. People want to see... They want to know more about the characters, and they want to see them get romantic and all that kind of
soap opera coverage. Yeah. I think they set it up with the knowledge that they're going to go into that, because you can't usually jump straight into a character like that if it's going to be something like you said, a horror anthology type thing. But you are always going through the same two characters, and they did set up two very inventive characters with the fact that the gender roles were kind of reversed from the usual thing, where the woman was
the cold scientific
skeptic, and then the male is this like kooky
romantic kind of want to believe.
Exactly, yeah. And they give them both dark pasts and things they're trying to in Mulder's case find, and in Scully's face reconcile like herself with their faith and all that stuff. And then, you know, they make them more complicated as they go and everything. I think they set that up well, because, you know,
and you just set up the dichotomy of the sort of the foil between it's the Sam and Diane thing, I guess, you know, they're opposites.
Yeah, I think you know, when you set up anything with the two main characters being Manfield, eventually you'll be able to go into that if you want to do it. So I think that it's not like they didn't plan on that.
Really. But for the longest time, that was really not at all an issue. I think it was an episode in season 4 towards the end where it was about like a guy that could shapeshift, and he had a tail, and he made himself into Mulder, and he acted all like he started coming out of the Scully, and it became like, like all of a sudden it was like, oh, she would be open to this. Well,
yeah,
but
there had always been an unspoken sexual tension, but
I don't know if it was too strong.
There was jokes about most of stuff. It.
Maybe
there,
I mean, in the very first episode, like she comes running into her his hotel room in like a bathrobe and it wants him to look at some scar on her neck, and so there's like sort of, but it's all very like it's very professional. So that part evolved much later in the show, which I think I'd give it credit to it, because you could really do, I think you can do darker stories when you're not constantly doing this whole like, oh, what's the character's struggle all the time stuff.
But you introduce it and then you let it be there, and it can always be an undercurrent.
Which, definitely.
Like, one of the reasons why they're driven to solve any sort of case is because it echoes their own drive to figure something out about
absolutely.
Themselves.
Absolutely. I'm thinking of, like, season 2 had one that was really, it was like a vampire one, but it felt like an episode of, like, Twin Peaks or something. Mm-hmm. And it was during the L.A. fires, and it was set in L.A., and it was in the period when she had been abducted, and she was missing, and so he didn't have his partner. They had both been reassigned, I think, too. Yeah. And he was essentially just trying to solve, like, a weird murder case in L.A., and so it was, like, a really dark, kind of twisted story. But I liked the way that story worked, and liked the way his character worked. He that kind of wasn't sleeping anymore, so he was almost doing the whole parody of a vampire thing where he was getting kooky. All
right.
So I would say I think season 5 to me felt a little weaker in places, because it was pretty clear that they were doing double duty trying to write this movie, and they had shot the movie, I think, all before they actually, you know, got started on season 5, because it was going to be like the follow up to that, and you knew that was going to be a big deal. I mean, I don't know how many TV shows have gone from being like a popular TV show and then they graduate up to a feature film that did pretty well. I mean, it came out in May and it did like 50 million, 30 million. It did all right.
It was kind of upsetting because it really didn't. I mean, the whole time, after a few years, everyone who watched it just started wondering when answers were going to start coming.
Exactly.
And so eventually they started very slowly tricking them in, but the movie didn't really answer anything. It threw actually a few more questions into it.
Of course. But then it did do like straightforward, like, oh yeah, that's a flying saucer.
Yeah.
And oh yeah, that's an alien. Uh-huh. And that's scary and weird. And it's creepy and like a monster alien kind of thing.
I was glad when I was finally able to find out, like, a lot of the episodes, the older ones that have to do with the overall story arc, make much, much more sense once you get to like season 7 or something like that, and they reveal some of the things that it's actually about, and then you go back and say, oh, okay, that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's creepy and confusing, like a Lost type thing. When you're first watching a few short episodes, then something creepy happens and you're like, oh man, that's awesome, and you're awash with the possibilities of what the thing could be. Eventually, you get pissed off that you don't know what it was. I wish I knew what that damn thing was after seasons and seasons.
Yeah.
And then finally they're like, well, you know, Princess and this, like, there's this special government thing, people that are preparing all people for this alien takeover. Then there's another alien people that are trying to stop the alien takeover because the one aliens are evil and stuff like that. So
it's very confusing almost. It is, I still don't know if I follow it all the way.
That's very basically what the whole
overarching basically thing was about. What it was. Yeah.
And it tied into Mulder's parents and his sister.
There was this vaccine thing, they were gonna spread something that wasn't the vaccine through bees, and that was dealt with in the movie a little bit.
Right.
And even in season 5, a little bit, something about how they could infect people with something, some genetic thing, and they were doing hybridization, and FEMA was going to be involved in something. And they did bring it back in the final episode to some of that, like in 2010, some big thing was going to happen that was going to result in all hell breaking loose. That was going to be when the invasion was going to start, basically.
Right.
I think that they did start to answer things, and I mean, from my standpoint, I think the biggest problem to me was that as they started to approach answering things and stuff, they didn't just decide that they were done with the show. I mean, basically, you kind of jump the shark when you go straight up to a feature film and you have buildings exploding and, you know, it's flying saucers coming out of Antarctica and everything, and that's a big deal. And then you go, boom, and you go, you sit down and, oh, new season of the TV show post this movie, which is incredible, and everything gets put back together. Like, this has to be pretty strong, and it still was for about 2 or 3 more seasons. But then it's just like, okay, basically they've got to start finishing this up, and they got to set it up for another big movie that will end the show, probably, right? And they didn't do that. What they did is they kind of kept trickling it down, and they kept doing, padding it with more of these anthology, horror anthology stories, some of which were still kind of funny, but they got more funny-ish. And then they introduced the new characters, and it was so abundantly clear, I think, that Duchovny was having an issue with Carter or something, and so he became kind of like problematic about he'd be in five episodes of the season.
He wanted to make some movies.
That too, probably. And so then, as they brought Robert Patrick in, he was sort of like the new. He was like the new Scully in a weird way, even though Scully was still there. Scully was kind of the new Mulder for a while, and then as they sort of phased Scully out with this pregnancy thing, then they brought in the new Scully, or they brought in the new Mulder to be, and it was just like. Really, you're just gonna bring in two new characters?
Because you would evolve,
like you said, you had started where it wasn't character driven so much, but these were the two characters, and you had started to evolve. It started to all be personal with them.
The story flowed through them. It
totally did.
Filtered through this conduit of their own personal
lives. And then to bring
lives.
In these two new people. And, like, they didn't really do much. I mean, they gave them their own backstories that could make them on some part, but they weren't really relevant to the story that had happened already. It wasn't like they just said, oh, hey, these two people have been part of this on some level, but in the background, and now they're in the forefront. And you just started feeling, oh, they're just doing this so that they have two people that fit in the role so that they can keep doing the show. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that the show had this clear, like, beginning, middle, and end conspiracy theory thing that needed to be concluded and needed to be brought to a close in a proper fashion, and instead they kind of trickled and it went, I think it went about two or three seasons too long. To me, it's the perfect example of an idea that somebody does a good job to develop, right. takes their time to develop, and it made sense that they did. I mean, season one has some pretty boring episodes. Like I said, some are filler, but some are good. Some of the standalone horror ones are good, but some of them are just, who cares? Mm-hmm. I always sort of like the mythology the most myself because it's something that was building and everything. And I was just getting sick of it. I was like, this needs to... I think I still watched every Sunday, but I became much less excited. Like, I entered college and I kind of just didn't care so much mm-hmm. about what happened in season seven. Once Mulder was less involved, I was like...
I stopped watching as much then also. I've seen all of it since then, but I really don't even remember. You've been talking about seasons and stuff. I don't remember... what any single episode, what season it was in, where it was.
I can only do that with the first four or five, really, and only with certain things.
I remember
things.
Individual things that happened in episodes, and I remember that certain ones were about, like the doctor from ER who ate cancer, and stuff like that. You know, I remember, like, individual, like, that were cool, and there was one about these two guys.
Rocket Romano eat cancer. That was the end of season four, because that was when they revealed that Scully had the cancer.
Exactly, yeah. And then there was, I remember, like, a lot of the comedic ones, like the two guys who find the genie. And,
yeah, that's season six.
The one guy, like, wishes his friend back, that he was alive again. He's like this zombie, just sits there going, like, painfully,
Some of the comedy ones were actually really good.
They're pretty
funny.
Good, yeah.
And I'm not giving it a problem. I mean, it was great that it did all that, and I really, really liked the show for a long time. Like, I was excited about a new episode on Sunday, and I recorded all the old ones. I made a point to, like, backlog, because I didn't really get into it till, like, season two-ish. And, you know, being a nerd and a geek, I didn't have much of a life on a Friday night, but I did, like, every third Friday, so I would miss, like, the important part of, like, a two-parter and always be pissed, like... You know, oh crap, he's on a train and something's going on. I don't know about the first part, how he got on
the train. Going to an old Art Deco hotel, and there's going to be a steampunk.
But there was a two-parter in the middle of season three, I think, that had to do with Mulder being on a train. And I got in on part two of it. And so I sort of backlogged and caught up on all those when they started airing in syndication really excitedly, and caught up to, like, season five, and then I was watching them all the time and really loved it. But then even I got tired of it, and it's just like the perfect example. If you've got an idea, you got to compartmentalize. I think that's really, other than, like, the obvious style stuff, and, like you know, I love the steampunk things, I love the cyberpunk stuff, and all that stuff that you can do in a cartoon show because it's cheaper. Even though cartoon animation is still expensive medium, it's cheaper to do that than it is to build it, or even to do all the CG stuff. I mean, we're getting to that level, and maybe we'll see what Lucas will do with that live-action Star Wars story. In terms of telling big, spectacular, sci-fi, epic type stuff. But what you get a lot of times with with an anime series is that they've got, they're compartmentalized. They're 13, they're 26, they're 52, they're a certain number of episodes based on a manga or whatever. And even if they're not, they're compartmentalized, and there is like a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so they go somewhere. And sometimes the endings are, you know, ill-satisfied, and right. there's things left unsaid and whatnot. But at least as you're watching it, it's all leading to something. You know, so many television shows, you talked about Lost just recently, and I just finished watching season four of Lost, which I think was going to be the final season, but then the writer's strike came in, and so now they're probably going to have like half a season worth of episodes left or something. They did 14 this season. And it did start living up to it, though. Like, it did start concluding stuff and making shit happen, and it got really good and energized towards, like, the latter half of it.
Well, they have a concrete ending.
Well, so. I don't know if they always did or what. I mean, I kind of don't like J.J. Abrams at this point, because I feel like he starts a lot of things and then just doesn't finish them. He, like, comes up with, like, oh, that'd be a weird idea, and I don't know how to finish it, but I'll direct the first episode, and then I go do something else, you know? He did that with Lost, and he did that with Alias, and, I mean, you know, I don't know.
And he jumps onto a big movie.
They give him money to do it. It's kind of like, really, the thing is, then everyone loves him so much and gives him so much credit for it, but it's like, you know, I would give, like, Brian K. Vaughan, the guy that wrote Why the Last Man and stuff, more credit for the new season of Lost than him, because he's actually one of the guys that's writing the episodes and figuring this out now. I mean, there's still co-creators of the show that have been there the whole time that are doing
Carlton
it.
Carlton Cuse and what's his name, the other guy?
Damien Lindelof.
Yeah, they've been there the whole time.
And so, you know, they really deserve the credit for it, but for some reason Abrams is the buzzword guy nowadays, and it's almost like he felt like he directed that Cloverfield, but he didn't. He just produced it.
Right.
It's like... Honestly...
He
does work with the same type character archetypes, which sometimes get kind of sickening, because they sort of really feel like they're all these cookie-cutter kind of white bread... suburbia, hipster types, almost in every series that he's had, they've almost all been that kind of personality, or older versions of those, like the father figures to those characters. But to get back to the X-Files, I basically just kind of got sick of it, and I started, like, you know, I almost didn't care on Sunday. Sunday night was a good time for a show like that, though.
It was
much better, because, like, you know, you watch The Simpsons, and then they put some crap in between. For a while, Futurama was in between, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And then they put King of the Hill there, and you were like, why are you doing this? And then they put King of the Hill at 7 when they knew that it could do whatever it wanted. They had Futurama at 7 too early, and then they would just use that 8:30 block to do whatever. For a while, though, they had Space Above and Beyond after The X-Files, which was sort of a follow-up sci-fi show that really didn't have to do with The X-Files. That show was actually pretty good in some episodes. It had to do more with, like, you know,
was that the one about that group and stuff? Fighter pilot, space fighter pilots?
It was. Yeah. There were a couple good episodes.
I was used to confuse that and Firefly before I had seen Firefly. I never watched
I could
Space
see how
Above
you could
Beyond.
Do that.
Because they both came out on Fox, and they were both spacey shows. And
yeah,
well,
Space Above and Beyond was, like, probably almost 10 years before Firefly, though, because, I mean... But...
10 years?
No, maybe not. I'm trying. Maybe like 5 or 6 or something. Firefly hasn't been on for a while either.
It's been a long time.
X-Files almost didn't make it. It's like one of the only Fox shows. It's like one of those good, like, drama hour. House are like the only two
Fox
shows that have managed to survive.
Consistently being in danger of them axing it.
But what they didn't do was smart. They didn't shift it around a lot. They kept it on Friday for a while, which is a terrible time to have any show you want anyone to watch.
Don't
you just put a movie on or rerun the shows that are popular a second time? I guess you don't need to do that with TiVo.
No, Fridays or Saturdays.
Put
something on Sunday, you put it on Thursday, or you put it on
Which is why, like, Adult Swim... I don't think Adult Swim bitches anymore about it, but they used to bitch about their poor ratings for anime on Saturday nights, and it was almost like, well, it's probably better than if you were just running, you know, Ben 10 episodes at 11:30 at night. Maybe not, but I don't know. You know, you've got some group of people watching.
Well, I think what's funny is that when they moved stuff around to different days before, and then they started running the bumps where people were, like, bitching that they don't show more anime, and they're like, you want to know why? Then they would show the ratings.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, any night we put it on, and it's crap. Like, you and 5 other people are watching it, buddy. Like, that sort of thing.
That's, yeah. You know,
like, guess what?
Weekdays.
You get more Family Guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everybody watches that, even though they've seen all the episodes.
Which is ridiculous.
And
I
still watch
that.
I honestly, like, if I turn on Family Guy, I'll sit there and watch it.
For a little bit. But the thing is, it's on TBS, and it's on Fox.
I don't watch it on TBS or Fox. I will watch it on Adult Swim, though. Which is, I don't know why I do that. Because it's Adult Swim. I'm like, oh, sweet.
You feel you owe it to it, right?
If I see it on TBS, I'll be like,
I think, well, with Adult Swim, part of the problem is...
They edit on stuff on TBS.
No, for their ratings issue... is that they premiere like all their new stuff on the web before they actually premiere it on TV. Like, I already watched the new Tim and Eric episode because it's premiering this Sunday, and so like I'm not gonna watch it on Sunday night. I don't give a shit. I mean, that's I might catch it, but I'm not gonna make a point. So the Venture Brothers does that and everything else, and then Venture Brothers still gets pretty good ratings. I think they've consistently been getting better and better ratings because they're developing a name and whatnot. But they're nothing beats fucking rerun Family Guys. It's ridiculous. Like, umpteenth time that Family Guy episode's been on, and it's, I don't quite get it with new good shots.
I'll tell you why. It's because it's at 10 and 10:30.
And yeah, if it's the timing schedule, I think that's part of it, yeah.
That's it. That's if they play Shin Chan at 10 and 10:30, it'll get higher ratings than Aqua Teen, you know?
Possibly. But I think they disputed that once because they aired like a rating block and they say it's a like Family Guy and then in parentheses at 11 o'clock. And then like the second one was something like Venture Brothers at 11:30. And then like the third one was something like Family Guy at 2 a.m.
And it was still
high. It was in the third, you know, and so
it's universal.
You know? I think it's just the idiot frat boys, maybe
the people who love like, to just be like the people who like Aqua Teen and the people who like Robot Chicken will both watch Family Guy.
I guess
it's in between.
It's something like that. Anyway, we really got off on a tangent there. But
so let me ask you: did you have watched the entire series of X-Files?
I've watched the entire series. I know how it ends, and that's the thing that pisses me off is that. It ended to me in a very unsatisfying
way. Refresh for me how it ends, because the last episode I watched ever was the last episode of it, but that was like
a long. I saw part of it on TV, like because it's on Sci-Fi.
I watched it on when it aired, and that was it. Yeah. And I've completely left
X-Files. It was a big deal. So. I think it was a 2-hour one. They had a helicopter.
It was like a second part of a big thing.
They got rid of basically Mulder ends up happening to be able to sneak into this underground thing where he finds the information about FEMA. He'll be out of here pretty soon. And so so the X-Files, final episode of the X-Files, Mulder has been on his own, kind of on the lam. He's no longer an FBI agent because something happened with an oil derrick 2 episodes before that or something. And it was kind of just like they were sick of him and they finally got rid of him. And so manages to sneak into this secret base and finds this information about FEMA. And then, what's his name comes after him? It's Adam Baldwin. Right. Is the big alien super soldier or whatever, which is a new aspect to the conspiracy that they added in those later seasons that I thought was kind of both stupid and old. You know, it was like pointless. I didn't like it.
And which alien side was he on? The bad aliens or the good aliens?
I think he was on the bad because he was trying to kill Mulder.
The good aliens technically were killing a lot of people.
Yeah.
They were the ones who had sewed up their eyes and mouths and stuff.
Exactly. And they were burning all the people that had been... because I think the thing is those people were being used to make hybrids that would help for colonization or something. Anyway, so then basically he gets captured by the... And he's accused of killing this guy, this super soldier, who isn't dead because he's a super soldier.
Right.
And it all becomes a trial to finally get rid of Mulder.
Yeah.
And the trial is the Seinfeld final episode. Let's just talk about the stuff that's happened. The
soup Nazi comes in.
Yeah, the soup Nazi comes in.
Gives testimony.
Basically, exactly. People come in and give testimony, and they refresh you on the whole show a little bit kind of quickly and kind of perfunctorily and not very well.
Was Skinner still in the agency then?
Skinner was still in the agency. Okay. I think he was still in at the end of the show, too. And I forget the name of the black guy who came in season 5 and took over for Skinner, kind of, and was like the new pain in the ass for him. But he had kind of turned around to their side at that point.
Yeah.
And so they help Mulder escape, and Mulder and Scully are basically on the run, but they find out some information about where to look for the cigarette smoking man
who was always in the cave.
In this cave, all like his hair's gotten long. I don't remember the episode before the last episode with him before that. It seemed like there was one with him, and I taped it, and back with tapes were what you had to do, and like the second half of it died off, and I kind of never found out what happened to him. It was like him and Scully had to team up at some point. Mm-hmm. It was weird, and do something.
And then like they shoot a rocket into the cave with a helicopter,
like, and they blew him up. They hit him right in his stomata.
What was the secret he had to divulge?
He didn't really divulge anything. He was really, and this part I didn't like about it. He was really like, you know, you're not gonna win. You can't make anything happen.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they did a backstory episode about him. They might have even done more than one that really made him a very interesting character.
Because he was always very interesting.
Because he was interesting in the nefarious what's going on with him. But then when they actually explained his backstory about, like, you know, being, you know, oh, he killed Kennedy and he killed Martin Luther King and, you know, and all this other stuff.
He was the go-to guy.
But he hated doing that. And the great thing was that he would write down what happened to him in real life, but, you know, under a pseudonym and pretend it was some adventure story. And he'd try to get published in these rag magazines and no one would publish it. Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. It didn't happen. And that's all he wanted. He even did the resignation. He was going to quit because he wanted to just write stupid crap like that. It made him a real person. And I loved that episode. And then to just throw all that away, all that character development, kind of making him like almost a real anti-hero character, because you get the sense that, you know, when he was working with the Securities Council or whatever, the UN group that they were trying to solve this problem. They were in a no-win situation with these aliens, but at the same time they were trying to set it up so that they could solve it. So you got a sense, at a certain point you got a sense that he really wasn't a bad guy. Mm-hmm. He just didn't want Mulder's solution, which was everybody should know all about this, and then there's chaos.
Now what was the?
But they made him just like an idiotic bad guy monster almost with the hair being all long and all scraggly at the end, and then had a helicopter blow him up, and then Mulder and Scully manage to escape. They go a different route, and the helicopter doesn't find him, and they end up in, of all places, like right outside Roswell, New Mexico, in a crappy hotel room, holding each other, and you know, just talking about, well, you know, we've got hope and whatever. And then it does a little whistling theme, and that's the end. And you're like, are they going to do another movie in a few years and finish this? Or is that the fucking ending of the show? And if that's the way they end the show, that's fine. And then, all of a sudden, you hear little rumors here and there. Oh, I've heard that they're going to do another movie. But it's going to have nothing to do with the conspiracy. And you're like, well, fuck, what's the point of that? And then you hear a little more. And like, oh, Carter wants to keep it real under wraps. And he did just fine with it, because no one gave a shit about that show at this point. No one was going to jump on spoiling that show. I mean, I'm sure there's still a handful of people, but... So it all of a sudden just comes out in the summer, you know, in the midst of all these other movies that are going to blow it away. I mean, it's probably going to be third or fourth or something. And it's the perfect knowledge that it's all you hear is it's Spotnitz and Carter. It's a story that they always wanted to tell in the series, but never really were able to because of, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Maybe they couldn't, the censors couldn't be dark enough or whatever. And the trailer makes it look like, basically makes it look like it's an episode.
It's an episode.
It's a standalone episode. It must take place sometime retroactively within the series, like between seasons 5 and 6 or something. Well, actually, that would be the movie. So it'd have to take place probably in earlier or whatever. But Scully's got the long hair, and so she looks different.
I'll spoil something for you. It has nothing to do with spoiling the movie, but it's set now. It's set 6 years after the series ended. I'll tell you that much.
That part to me makes no sense, because they were on the run and he was at FBI. Did they even deal with that? Mm-hmm. They just, is it believable?
Oh yeah.
What, they come out and they're like, we need you to solve this. It's such a big deal that all crimes are forgiven and all that stuff's been water under the bridge.
I don't want to say that's exactly it, but that's exactly it. You could have written the movie, I guess. Honestly, like, I will say nothing about the plot. You should watch it.
Then I mean, I could believe that it could be a good standalone movie.
It would have been a great standalone episode. It was a little better than mediocre movie, just because a great standalone episode of The X-Files is not good enough to be a movie about The X-Files, because it does not deal with the main
mythology. Yeah. Yeah,
but in a way, it kind of does, because they both have very, they're both very very driven in this movie with their respective things. And I think they did. It was very good as a character study for both, especially Scully and Gillian Anderson. I never liked her, and I didn't like Scully in the show. She was very good in this movie. She was very good.
She's been doing a lot of like masterpiece theaters, acting stuff. Mm-hmm. So you know, she's probably
David Duchovny is David Duchovny. He mumbles. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. She was very good. She was very had a wide range in this movie. It was
interesting.
And
Billy Connolly's crying the black oil, but that's not from the mythology, right?
No, that's some other bullshit. That was just blood. It's interesting, and it plays a lot to Scully's stuff more than it does Mulder's. But they did a good job of ramping up Mulder's thing as well. They throw a bone here and there to the fans, and there's a lot of There's moments that were like kind of failed attempts at humor, but would have been kind of funny in the show. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You put something in a movie, and it becomes magnified to the point where if something's not funny enough, you're like, why did they even try?
Yeah.
On the show, it's a small scale thing. Yeah. And it's one of many. And if something like that had happened, some funny stuff had happened in the movie, I would have been like, oh, that's funny.
Or in the show, yeah. But in the movie,
it wasn't worth it. It was like that was dumb. They shouldn't have even tried. But overall, it was good. As an episode, I would have given it a very high rating. As a movie, I give it a probably B minus again.
Okay, you're falling into my trap of the B minus, huh? So I guess like I said, I don't know if I care about this movie enough to care about spoilers, but I'm more interested in the possibility, because I still like the show enough.
Mm-hmm.
That I believe there's a chance that they'll actually do right and properly end the show. Is this sort of a way to bridge that, to fix the problems with the last few seasons and kind of get everything back to zero in terms of Mulder and Scully or these hotshot paranormal FBI agents, and now we can go back to, and then they can do another movie after this that will then be the one that solves the
problem. They could do another movie, but they'll have to
do really they'll well at the box office,
they'll
obviously.
They'll have to do that, but they'll have to re-jump the story the same way they did in this movie again. They'll have to... I'm trying not to give anything away. It's not... There's nothing really to give away, but I don't want to, like...
Well, does it feel like it's almost like an alt-con kind of situation?
No. It really does seem... after a while, after you get through the whole thing, you realize that is probably the place they would have both been. It's much more reasonable with Scully's character than it is with Mulder. The place where they begin and the place where they end the movie is reasonable for her 6 years after they had gotten away from this thing.
Well, yeah, they were on the run for 6 years, right. Maybe, or who knows what, you know?
And then with him, it's he's just as out there as always. And
is Doggett in it?
There's no Doggett.
No Doggett? No Gish?
No Gish.
What about Skinner? Too busy being on Stargate Atlantis.
And, it's one of those fan excitement things. And at the end, he only appears in the last third, but he's in it. Yes. Okay. And when you see him, you're like, some people in the audience were like, "Yeah, Skinner."
Yeah, because Skinner was cool.
Well, because you see a bald head step out of a car.
Yeah, exactly.
So, somebody goes, "How'd you get us out here in the middle of the night? You had to call some FBI bigwig. Who is he?" And Scully goes, "Hey, that's the bigwig right there." And Skinner steps out of a car.
Cool.
Everyone's like, yeah.
So, he's grown in the agency then? He's no longer just deputy district or whatever? Know. Who knows? Yeah. So, they at least like, are trying to... They're acknowledging that the series existed in this.
Yeah.
And they're saying, we know that we dug ourselves into a serious pit in the corner at the end of the show, but we're going to kind of dig out and you'll all just have to kind of let us...
It was some interesting stuff, and I mean,
if they pull it off and do it well, I will be... Because to me, that's always the most interesting thing, is when you see a writer write themselves into a corner and then successfully find a way to pull it out and make it work without it feeling really contrived and idiotic. If they do, then I give them props. And I mean, I'm not going to say that they wouldn't, because they're pretty good writers.
It was a little brushed over, but the way they explain it, it makes sense. The one problem I have is with Chris Carter, because there are moments...
Did he direct this too?
Yeah. There are moments where it looks great. And then there are moments where it looks like he thinks he's directing a TV show, and it just
does not too happen. too many medium wides and boring.
And sometimes the look is great, and other times, and there's a few effects shots that look just like a bad effects shot in a TV show.
Ooh.
Not bad, but like it.
Well,
I mean,
knows
it really
what kind
does
of budget
look like
they
I was
had
watching on Fox while I was on the thing, you know.
I wonder what kind of budget they had for this. I know that, was it Rob Bowman directed the first movie? And he had directed some of the episodes, and he had directed Star Trek The Next Generation stuff. He was mostly, he'd come out of TV, and I think that was the first feature that he did. And it was definitely big in scale.
It was much more cinematic than this one.
Yeah, yeah.
It had much more Michael Bay spinning around the principal's photography.
Definitely,
and this has very little of that.
Yeah.
Which
works.
The score
was
good.
Thing. Was it? Did the snow?
The
do
snow
it?
Did it. Yeah.
So they kind of brought back all the. They brought back.
They
the,
did
the it, team.
Every once in a while, they would do an annoying callback to the admittedly terrible TV theme,
which little whistly theme, you know,
because it's too goofy and like,
yeah, it's a little dumb.
This movie's like, it's like dun 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 dun, and it's like dee, like all of a sudden that comes in and then it just kills it.
It does kind of
the whistle, you know.
The whistle is tough. It's got a lot of iterations, but sometimes it's who knows. Yeah, Mark Snow also did the score for the USA La Femme Nikita TV series, which I actually liked and thought was pretty good for a while there.
Yeah, I only watched a couple episodes of that. I never watched that, or Witchblade, or Silk Stockings.
I didn't watch Witchblade or Silk Stockings. This wasn't like that. This was like a spy.
Yeah, I know. Like, it was a cable action show. So therefore, it's Silk Stockings or Witchblade to me.
Well, Silk Stockings was a cable softcore show.
Yeah.
That you'd watch on Saturday night hoping that they would slip up, like that they would forget.
Yeah, I know.
And they'd be like,
it was just women in panties and bras.
Yeah, they're not going to be a nipple in this.
Do you remember the one about the bike cops?
Oh, that show? Pacific Blue? Was that what it was called? The show about the bike cops, or an episode of... Because I didn't actually watch any of this crap. I remember the bike cops.
What's her name? Mokler was on it.
Shana Mokler was on it.
Shana,
yeah,
something like that.
Blink 182 drummer's ex-wife.
Ex-wife now, yeah. And that show had a lot of, like, almost TNA. It was like following on Baywatch sort of thing.
But it was on earlier.
Like, hey, let's put these hot chicks that normally would have been in Baywatch in bikinis and just put them in, like, bike shorts. And they'll be right by the
tight
beach.
Tight white police-looking things.
They'll be right by the beach. And that's almost Baywatch, right?
Yeah. And then, so it was like that was on.
Because bike cops look really menacing.
Yeah, they do. Oh, man.
What a stupid idea.
But Duckman was good. Duckman was on USA before.
Too much psychosis.
Yeah, it was definitely pretty psychotic. Too much neuroses.
Yeah, he had a lot of problems.
He had a lot of problems.
I like characters that that can be bad people without having a lot of problems first.
Yeah.
There's one thing about, like, I can't believe I bought the whole series, but we've talked the Critic.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's some really funny moments in it, but his character is just, like, has so many problems. It's like watching, I don't know what it is, but, like, it's not fun to me to watch someone whose life is, like, not that their life is bad, but they themselves
are that unhappy,
are so miserably unhappy, because, like,
yeah,
I hate to keep going back to it, but I know It's Always Sunny, like, they're not unhappy, they're too stupid to be unhappy.
Kind of, those people
are too stupid and vain to be unhappy.
It's the whole, like, duality of comedy tragedy, and it's that existential malaise. Like, there were a couple of episodes of Duckman that were, like, there was one with where he was, like, dating this woman, and, I don't know what ended up happening, but it ended up being one of those, like, you know, he had to kind of push her away because of something, and it just ended with, like, him all sulking while the phone was ringing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that was really, like, that was a really, like, a somber
way
to end
it. That's not the Duckman that I signed up for.
That's not the Duckman I signed up for. But, yeah. All about TV shows that either ended before their time or went on way too long. I don't know. To me, it really soured the X-Files. I think part of it was because it ended without ending still, even though it went on too long.
Mm.
If it had had an actual ending at that point, I think I would have given it a pass, and I probably would have actually gotten into those seasons more, just because it would have been like, well, it's getting to the ending.
Remember when the ghost of Krychek helped Mulder? I always remember the ghost of Krychek.
He was seeing him or something, or some psychosis thing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was
the ghost of Krychek.
Yeah. He had the chains, like,
yeah.
Bob Marley.
It was Bob Marley
and the Wailers.
Yeah.
They were jamming.
I like Krychek. I remember that from that
guy. Yeah, Seth always, whenever we're watching something, just some crappy thing on Sci-Fi Channel or something, we're flipping by, 9 times out of 10, he's just like, dude, that's Krychek. And I'm like, no, it's not Krychek. He's like, I'm pretty sure that was Krychek. And it started seriously, and it's just now becoming a joke, like, 10 years later.
But he's mostly serious about seeing Krychek everywhere he looked.
Seeing Krychek at, like, movies all the time. He's like, that's the guy, that's Krychek, right?
What's Krychek up to, you think?
I have no idea. He's probably being in crappy sci-fi original movies and stuff. Maybe he's moved to producing and writing or something. I don't know. Sometimes those people do that, and it's weird.
He got, like, his own show midway through the X-Files thing. Like, they gave him a show with somebody else that lasted for, like, 2 episodes. It wasn't a spinoff. It was like another show.
It's possible that they did some spinoff, a non-spinoff show. Yeah, I think you're right. I think I remember that actor was...
I remember, like, D.B. Not D.B. Sweeney, but, what's his name? Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of D.B. Sweeney.
Possibly.
That had his own... It was, like, something about luck, and how this guy was a detective or something, and there was something about luck in the title.
Was that the one that had the devil in it, too?
No.
D.B. Sweeney was in the one with the devil. And then you're right, there was another one... No. I remember, you're right. The Luck one was D.B. Sweeney, mm-hmm. and the other one with the Devil. They both came out at the same time. I think they were supposed to be, were they supposed to be replacement? No, they were Friday shows. Friday they were supposed shows. To be, like, grooming them to be the new replacement. Yeah, 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 yeah. And then after X-Files ended, the replacements were also on Friday, like an idiot.
Yeah.
But they were Firefly and that other one, John Doe.
Why would you do that? I mean, you're just admitting to the film, the people who are making the show, that it's not going to be around very long when you do that. We're going to cancel it on Fridays. We're putting it on the worst day, so we're going
to
cancel.
Well, I think maybe what they're saying is, hey, you know, if it's catering to geeks, then geeks don't have a life. You know, they're going to be home on Fridays at 8 o'clock, and maybe they're right more times than often. But normal people have to watch it too in order for it to be super popular. And geeks are so seasoned about science fiction that they're going to be a little more harsh critics of it, by and large, unless it's a good show. It's well written, like Firefly was. But then they started it haywire by not doing the, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it's like, I don't know what you can do at that point. What you can do is give it more time. And people know that. I mean, it's so obvious. And you're seeing it actually work now. The Dark Knight broke the records. How does that happen? What? It's objectively a good movie.
Uh-huh.
It's a good crime drama, but it's also a superhero movie, but it's not a lot of a superhero movie. It's got good actors and good directors, and they're blowing up real buildings, and they're doing all the stuff that we've always known is how you make a good movie. Mm-hmm. Like a good big movie like that. You know, they're not cheating, and everyone else is still like, it's like, okay, there you go. There's your magic formula. You get good people to write a good story, and then you make it for real.
Mm-hmm.
And it will make money, and people will see it because the audiences aren't stupid. They're going to sit for 2.5 hours and watch a crime drama.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do it just because it had Batman in it? I don't know. I don't know if that was the only reason.
Well, they went to see because it had Batman, but people went back again because
they liked it as a good movie. Yeah. But it's not like a fucking Roland Emmerich movie. You know, it's not Independence Day. It's not Will Smith saying "Welcome to Earth." Oh hell no!
Welcome to Earth.
And so. It's like, quit making those kinds of blockbusters, I guess what I'm saying. It's been shown.
Independence Day made so much money.
I'm sure it did. And you know what? It's fun for what it is. All the Roland Emmerich, Dean Devlin movies, it's the one that I could probably watch again at some point later. But
more than Stargate?
I really want to like Stargate. I love Stargate. And I almost will get suckered into watching it anytime it's on TV. I like
anything with James Spader in it.
Yeah, Spader's great, and Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And the score was awesome. Yeah. And stuff. But it just all their movies just fizzled.
From the Crying Game in it.
All their movies just fizzled. Like they did, they had pretty solid openings and pretty solid middles, and then they just get into this. Now we need to just rush this action sequence and have it all conclude.
Godzilla ended really badly.
Godzilla ended terribly with the stupid baby Godzillas, and like Moon 88 was kind of cool, but it got all stupid and. Even Independence Day was, but it just was always kind of stupid, so it really didn't have anywhere to go. But Stargate, you're right, was, come on. I mean, I guess they turned it into a successful TV show.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I think that maybe 40% of it I would really like, but because that's not 100%, it'd be tough for me to sit around and watch it because they'd be like, oh, this is the episode where Teal'c's body is switched with the mind of Dr. Jackson and. Uh-oh.
Dun,
shenanigans. I don't even know what it is.
I was still blame that I don't like that show, but I've never seen it.
I've purposely not watched it. I've seen, like, two episodes.
Every time I turn it and there's the black guy with the face paint.
That's Teal'c.
And I, as soon as I see him, I'm like, click.
The thing is, you just have to know a little bit about, like, certain things, and then you can pose that you know it, and then you can talk shit about it. That's what I like to do. Like I'll talk shit about Stargate because I know what it is.
Because you know a couple bit. Names.
I know like about the Gould and stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the same
Elliot with, Gould.
The same with like Star Trek: The Next Generation. Though I did try to watch that show for a while, but I watched it when it was
first. TNG was great, man.
I got sick of the plots. Basically,
gosh, dude, they did a great thing with their aliens. I got to give credit to Star Trek people. Any fans. I mean, you get fans that are stupid enough to believe that just because someone has, like, a notch in their ear.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And, like,
they're an alien.
And this other person has a few stripes right here. Like, that's an alien race. I love it.
It's great. It's so idiotic. You know? Well, they did do an episode of Next Generation where they explained
because that. Every creature was created in God's own image, right?
No. It was almost something like that. It was like, oh, hey, they almost look like the master form humanoid. Yeah,
forebears.
They're like, we don't have any hair, and our ears are smooth.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we don't have any features we're just like humanoids.
Yeah. Everyone else
is an offshoot of that.
Yeah, It's all evolution.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like the Romulans and the Klingons and the Vulcans and the Federation were all trying to come together to figure this out because they thought it was a weapon or something. And it was a one throwaway episode. They also did a throwaway episode that they kind of called back to a few times.
They were all throwaway episodes.
Where they actually brought up, like, they were trying to bring up environmentalism, and they brought up this whole thing about, like, there's a certain sector of space where there's a lot of warp travel, and it was like, it's tearing subspace. And it's like, basically, if you travel warp drive, like, is the equivalent of carbon footprint driving a car.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, if you're driving, if you're warp nine, he mentions it in First Contact when he says, like, disengage the, you know, warp protocols or whatever. Something about, like, you know, go to warp nine.
Yeah.
Because, like, they purposely lowered them so because of that, I think.
Uh-huh.
They would do stuff like that. But basically every single, like, nine times out of ten, the Next Generation plots were something dumb like this. They were like, okay, the Enterprise is going to be hosting some diplomatic summit, and some diplomat shows up. And he's got a dark secret, and you can tell almost immediately because something reveals it real quick, and somebody's sort of suspicious, and then something happens, and maybe there's a murder mystery, like Agatha Christie plots or some bullshit like that.
And then they
almost get on the neutral zone, and then they almost have like an awesome fight, and then at the last minute, like the guy reveals that blah blah blah, and then nothing cool happens. A handful of times something cool happened. And usually it was the Borg ones that were something cool happened. The two-parter where the captain gets captured and everything, that was pretty cool. That was like, wow, they're actually doing something with the story. I'll tell you what happens
in every single... Here's like, the episodes are all about this. So there's stuff about the Borg and stuff like that.
Well, I know there's all the allegorical humanistic stuff.
Like this. The Hollow Room breaks, right?
And Moriarty escapes.
That's the one. The other one is Q shows up.
Uh-huh.
And then he makes him some gadgets.
He never made gadgets. He always made him...
I'm talking about Q from James Bond.
Oh.
And then, so Q shows up and then plays around with him for a while. At the end, he's like, oh, I'm just joking with you guys. See you next time.
He teaches them a lesson about their arrogance and their hubris.
Or they visit a planet where somebody gets warped or zapped onto their ship who's a long-lost lover of one of the immediate crew. The crew who hangs out, who doesn't die.
Yeah.
The immortal crew.
That isn't Tasha Yar.
Yeah. So that's generally, like, you know, I ended up watching a lot. Like, I'd be sitting at my grandparents' house, my uncle would be watching it. So I watched a lot growing up, like, as a kid. There was a lot of Next Generation going on.
Yeah.
And it had good production values, and I really enjoyed that show because they were able to make, no matter how dumb the episode was, which mostly it was, they were able to make it seem like there was some sort of creepy thing going on. Because they always cut, for some reason, you always have to go to the engine room, and Geordi LaForge is like, I don't know what to tell you, man.
And the blue thing is glowing.
Yeah, and there's this, like, steady hum, and, like, there's just this silence, so there's no music, and a steady hum, and things like blue. And he's like, I don't know what to tell you, you know, something's going wrong, you know, like, and then you're like, oh, man, these guys are in trouble, because they're in a ship, you know? Yeah. Like, if it blows up, they're all going to die.
They're stuck in the middle of nowhere.
And pretty frequently, you know, the ship did blow up, and they all had to escape in the
saucer.
Which they did in the movies.
They did it in the show. They separated it a couple times. With the battle bridge and everything.
Right.
No, I don't know. I think one of the biggest problems I had with it is...
As soon as the thing separates, they're sitting there, and then Picard's like, is everyone who mattered here? Mm-hmm. All right, good. Like, the other 14,000 people on the ship are back there blowing up.
Number one, probably.
Yeah.
But is that there's so much of the pseudoscience technobabble that they waste time on in that show.
Yeah, a lot of it.
And it's just like, why? Why bother with it? And I remember,
it's to put you into the world.
But at a certain point, it doesn't. It just is like waste of time. It's like, you know what? Geordi LaForge is just going to talk for 5 minutes. So I got to reroute the doop to do. And then some other engineer comes up and is like, but I'm going to, you know, upcheck with the power converter. And the other thing about Star Trek that I really didn't like, and this is why I like Nick, I mean, Ron Moore didn't like that so much, and he handled most of the Klingon episodes in Next Generation towards the end, and then he went on and he did a lot of the better episodes, and Brian Fuller was writing for Deep Space Nine and stuff, and so like, the later seasons of that were, like, actual characters were in that show, like people with flaws and stuff, because the whole thing about fucking Star Trek is that if they have flaws, they're so, like, simplistic and sitcomish in the way that they solve them. Like you said, you know, it's like some lost love of Riker, and he, you know, he's struggling about it for half the episode, and then it gets solved, and it's not a very big deal, and it never really affects anyone, and everyone's always so smart, and all their, like, no one has any vices in Star Trek, at least not in The Next Generation at all. They drink this, their synthanol, just the right amount, they all drink fucking tea,
right.
Like, no one drinks Earl Grey tea, and they, you know, they play an instrument, and they, all their hobbies are, like, intelligent things. And they all read books and everything. Right. There's no one that just, you know, there's no one.
That's why.
There's no one just lounging
that's
around.
That's why the old Star Trek is better, because Kirk had a lot of, he really showed his human flaws
yeah.
like Picard did. Picard is cool. I like Picard.
He was all right.
What's his face who plays him?
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, but.
The line must be drawn here.
But Kirk was so arrogant and, like, passionate that, like,
he was gung-ho
and you could tell, even though they didn't show that stuff
from
G.I.
Joe,
you could tell that, even though they didn't show vices, like, he was addicted to heroin or something, like, he probably had some, you know, but he was also I'm interested to see what they do with this.
The new thing would be interesting, but I've seen the posters for it, and already, like, if that one guy's supposed to be Kirk, that looks like a J.J. Abrams, like, yuppie douche character, and I'm like, fuck this shit, I'm bored already.
They should have just gotten Shatner to play him.
They should have. It would have been awesome.
Put on some.
I'm not all purist about that. I mean, you're right. Some of the old episodes from the original series were pretty good. I mean, to be honest, I think when they did do things where the characters were flawed, like, that's why the Borg stuff was interesting, because Picard did have to deal with, like, he really hated them because they raped his mind and made him do stuff.
Yeah.
And there's the episode right after the Borg where. It's actually good because, like, he goes back to Earth and he's, like, on his family vineyard with his brother, and they get into a fight in the mud, and he just loses it. And his brother's like, it just means you're human, you know? You're a regular person. And I'm like, that was a good episode. And it wasn't a big Star Trek bullshit episode filled with a bunch of techno babble that doesn't mean anything and it doesn't matter. It's not dramatic. It doesn't further a narrative. It doesn't really do anything except indicate that these people are all really on the ball about technical science stuff that isn't real. That just kind of makes you think, wow, they're all on the ball all the time. And that was always my biggest problem with Star Trek, by and large, is that your characters need to have flaws and vices and things that makes them interesting. And when Picard was dealing with the Borg, he did. And, like, in First Contact and stuff, when he loses his shit and he, like, you know, he, like, breaks that thing. He's like, no, we're going to kill him. We're going to stop it. It's like, yeah, that's for real. That's, like, that's good drama right there. That's interesting, more so than just, like, you know... Hold off. I think we can negotiate about this.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good, Sean Connery.
No, not really. If I say the line must be drawn here, then I...
Number one?
It's all about the here.
You have to say number one?
Engage. Make it so.
Engage. Womack.
Yeah. Also, the ship looked so stupid on that series.
Come on, man.
It looked like a whale or something. It was like this giant, huge saucer. It was all fat in the front and everything. The other ones always looked really sleek and awesome.
Are you talking about...
The first one with the saucer dish didn't, but the one
with
from
the
movie,
gigantic stems coming up.
The one from the movie I thought looked pretty cool because it was still kind of sleek. It looked like kind of a hot rod, but the new one, the E was cool. I like the E because the E was kind of like a reimagining of the original one with, like, you know, but it was really very sleek.
Awesome.